The very first thing I want to do is welcome you guys. This is just the third Live Alchemy call, and I'm just excited about it to have so many serious major alchemists in the one space. And the very first item of business is the fabulous product that Sigverta donated from his product category or catalog, because Sigverta has a company which is Tibetan Gold, operating out of Hong Kong. And Sigverta, would you please announce a little bit about your product and then announce the winner for the raffle?
Yes, anyone who has gone to our website knows that there's a number of products that switch around all the time, and that's because we use a program that automatically does that. But there's a couple of things that you need to know. Is one, on the top right-hand side, it always has, and the website does this, the top-selling products or the best sellers. So it gives you an idea of what the other people are purchasing, and it's in the order of the most sold, and it gives the top 10. And then just below that is a category column which has the various categories. You can go directly to a category like Ormus Food or Ormus Men's Cosmetic Products or the Rich Organic Flower Teas, and the it will then bring up just a listing of those in that category rather than having to wade your way through all the different products. So use that feature. Also, if, you know, I've had a lot of people write me about specific illnesses or whatever and ask, what do I have that, you know, would answer that or cure that? And there are two search engines on our website. One is for the website itself, the search Tibetan Gold, and then the second one is the Google. They pay me a tiny bit. I think in nearly a year and a half they have given me about $90 for people who actually search Google from our site. But on our search, the Tibetan Gold search, if you do hit the link for advanced search, and like if you're wanting something for diabetes, for example, On the advanced search, just type in diabetes, and any of the products that have any affiliation with diabetes would then come up. You might get a listing of, say, six or seven items, some Ormus, some curative teas. So there are some features on there that can be quite helpful as you navigate through. On the far left side of the website, there are a number of articles that are very interesting. Anything you want to know about Ormus is also there. But also in educational, important educational links, there's a tremendous amount of stuff. It took me 2 years to compile all the information that's on this website. There's probably 1,000 pages of written information. So it can be very educational even if you don't ever buy anything. I think I'm supposed to announce the winner of the raffle. And to the winner... Yes?
Yeah,
hello?
Who is it?
Yes?
Who is
it's
it?
Breaking up, Dennis.
Dennis asking who won the raffle.
Okay. Well, I'm trying to create a bit of suspense here. But anyway...
I understand it.
What I was going to say is whoever the winner is, and his name is Edward Idens.
Oh, for Pete's sake. I put my dad's name on that.
Oh, did you? Okay, well, that's the winner. And this is what I'd like you to do. You can go to the website, and you wouldn't be ordering this through the website. Otherwise, they will charge you for it, and they won't send us the order from the website. So you have to do that by direct email to me. And you can do that either on the Yahoo list directly to SigvertaYahoo.com or to Sigverta at TibetanGold.com. And then just tell me the items that you want. You can add everything up to 100 U.S. dollars in value. And we'll put that together in the next couple of days or so and then ship it out to you.
You know, that's really neat because I was just in the process. I have your website in front of me of ordering stuff for Dad right now. He's a stroke victim, and I'm busy ordering Brook Yellowgrass Herbal Tea and a few other things.
Well, now you can get them for free. They're not free, but I mean, as a participant and a raffle winner, you can now just pick out $100 worth of various products. Let me know by email, and then I'll put them together for you and have them shipped out in the next day or two.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Well, there you
That's
go.
Beautiful.
The right person in the right place at
That's
the right time.
That's glad.
What's your name, winner?
I'm going under Dick Fox right now because I've got my name all over the place. That keeps things in perspective for me. I've got probably a dozen different sites that have so much email that I can't sort it out, so I'm using Dick Fox for my alchemist name. My real name is Rich Gideon.
Is what?
Rich Gideon. It's pronounced phonetically. It's the same as my dad's name.
Oh, Gideon.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Incidentally, it was his credit card I used to charge stuff with.
So did you place an order?
As a matter of fact, I was in the process of doing that while we were sorting out this call. I've got a list and a couple items in my cart here.
Talk about instantaneous manifestation.
How's the timing?
Well, he couldn't have been any later, that's for sure.
All right, thank you very much.
Probably won't cover it. I'm going to be buying quite a bit of stuff from this.
The first $100 worth is a bonus for free.
Well, that's just marvelous.
Yeah.
And I do thank you very much.
You're certainly welcome.
Yeah, and we thank you, Sick Bird. That's a really lovely gesture to help this community and to fundraise for Barry. So listen, what I'd like to do is introduce the guest of the day. Now, this man, every time I hear his name or see his name written on the list, it's always like, this is a major alchemist. This is a serious product producer. And I had to tell you this morning, just to get in the mood, I had both Don's product and Sick Bird's product, and I'm feeling good. Thank you very much. So I want to introduce Don Nant from Florida, and Don, lead it out, man. Just tell us what you want to tell us. Oh, look. Let me just say before Don starts, if you've got any background noise, don't bother. Only mute yourself if you've got background noise. But otherwise, just try and keep the noise down, because the whole call will hear it. And thanks very much for that. And so, Don, you're on.
Cool. Well, from listening to Sigurda, it sounds like time for me to revamp my website. I knew it was antiquated, but come on. You're doing some impressive work there. Keep it up. You hear me, Sigurda?
Yes, I do.
Cool.
I was thinking I need to revamp mine because it looks a bit dated to me, but it seems to work all right.
Well, I've been battling with myself for several years now which direction to go. I still haven't decided yet. Too many products, basically. Anyway, I'm Don Nance. I'm originally from Virginia, and born August 11th, 1955. And back in the late 1990s, my brother and I were both ill. My brother had hepatitis C with liver failure. He contracted it while in the U.S. Navy aboard an aircraft carrier. When I was taking care of him, I started getting sick myself. I was just thinking, well, you know, it was stress. But as I found out, it was colon cancer. I found that out when I went to the hospital with kidney failure. Essentially, my brother's insurance canceled, my insurance canceled, and there was nothing much to do but either get well or die. So I tried to reach David Hudson because a friend had turned me on to work. But he was in the hospital having a heart bypass surgery. I couldn't reach him. So the same person knew about the White Gold List and got in touch with Barry Carter. And Barry Carter arranged for some people to do a sodium burn with the Essenes Black Sand. They made M3 for me, sent it to me, a quart for me and a quart for my brother, absolutely free of charge. And I started taking a teaspoon of it twice a day. And this went on for several months. And I tell you, I thought it was doing absolutely nothing. I was at a point where I was literally having to crawl around the house. My brother was starting to show signs of improvement after about 2 months. His color was coming back. Had more energy. And I said, well, you know, Kugel's working on him. It might work on me. So I just kept taking it. Well, after about 3 months of taking this material, I woke up one morning, and it was just like someone had turned the light switch on. I felt 10 years younger. My energy was totally back. And I got out of bed, and I've been out of a major sick bed ever since. So, a fellow that was on the White Gold List taught me the wet method. And from there, another fellow taught me the sodium burn. And all of these people are alchemists. And from there, you know, the past years, I've been studying and learning, studying the ancient alchemists, the classical alchemy, everything I can get my hands on about the Essenes technology, and have been basically trying to learn. You know, that's been my quest, to learn and to be able to give back what these people did for me. So I went back and had the same tests again, and this was 6 months after I first started taking the M3. When I ran out of the M3, I started making Great Salt Lake manna. I had been taught the wet method and was taking that. Well, no sign of cancer. And my brother continued to get better. His color came back. His liver actually started making blood again. The plant gets part in that process. And the rest, as they say, is history. I wouldn't change a thing. Because all of that was actually a gift. And it's hard to describe what it's like. You would never understand what all of that was like. I can't describe it to you. But it was something that I had to live through in order to know. Okay? So, let's shift gears a little bit. I'm going to throw something out there that you might want to be thinking about. You're familiar that the stem cell research, or they call it fetal cells, is basically undifferentiated tissue that can grow to become any living tissues or organs needed, theoretically. Well, that appears to be what illness is an undifferentiated matter. It could possibly grow to become whatever elements or compounds are needed. And some of the research that I've been doing on the material is pointing in that direction. I also want to put that out there for you to be thinking about.
Could you describe some of the research you've been doing, Don? Don?
Someone else is talking.
Could you describe some of the research you've been doing on these materials in terms of the assays and stuff?
Absolutely. Most of the work that I've published has to do with the Dead Sea. For several years on those email lists, there have been controversy about whether or not there are orms in the sea salt or in seawater, especially in the salt. So I decided to investigate for myself, you know. What better way to cut through the BS than to go and see it with your own eyes? So I started working with Masada brand sea salt. It's a bath salt, unscented, that you can buy anywhere. And it gives you a lot of precipitate. So I made it up, sent it off for assay. We did mass spectroscopy on the precipitate from it, emission spectroscopy. I've had just about every test of the material done known to man. And they come back repeatedly, 83% or more, depending upon which sample and which process you tested by. 83% of that precipitate is totally invisible to assay. Cool. That's mind-boggling. But I took some of the precipitate after having talked with Yacine at length on the telephone, and after having read all of the information that I could get, specifically about how Solomon was transmuting these elements from the monoatomic form back into metal. So I performed that process on the Dead Sea precipitate. Well, I'll tell you about some of the strangeness in a moment, but immediately I took a sample of it of the burned material that had been reduced to metallic form and sent it off for assay. I had both mass spec and emission spectroscopy done on it, as well as the good old-fashioned fire assay. So if there's any quantifiable precious elements in there, there's no way they're going to be being seen. Okay. Pardon me if I stumble through some of this. I haven't rehearsed anything for this call. The assay came back 0.4 ounces per ton of silver, 0.04 ounces per ton of gold. Well, that's about 1,000 times more than the metal that ever assayed to be in the Dead Sea to begin with, in its pure form. Say, okay, there's something going on here.
How long was it after you started that assay, you did that first assay?
Well, we had that assay done immediately.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Steve Coleman at Ocean Mana sent it off and paid for that one. That's why I don't have a copy of it. Steve's got a copy. And I haven't been able to talk to him. So in the future, I'll either replicate it or get a copy from whatever happens.
Mm-hmm.
But I took the rest of the material and put it in a plastic bucket. Normal high-density polyethylene bucket, HDPE, and put the lid on it. I had taken samples and put it in some of the beakers, and these are high-quality borosilicate glass beakers. And two of them crumbled to dust within a week of just having this cold material sitting in it. I took another sample out of the bucket and put it into a new beaker. And the next day, it was starting to disintegrate. So I poured the material out of the beaker back into the bucket and put the lid on it. I didn't know it, but all this time, I was getting loose. I would get a radiation poisoning from this material because of it. And I've been warned about it. But I've always been kind of a cavalier about something. I'm slow to learn. But anyway, a year later, I take the material out of the bucket and I send it off for the same tests again. Mass and emission spectroscopy and fire assay. Well, it comes back. The first assay said 0.4 ounces per ton of silver. This new assay comes back 279.408 ounces per ton of silver. The original assay was 0.04 ounces per ton of gold. That comes back 1.4 ounces per ton of gold. It's been sitting in a bucket. No one's done anything to it except nature. And this research proves several things. Number one, that these worms are invisible to assay, including fire assay, emission and mass spectroscopy, neutron activation. I've had it all done. And to make sure that there was no mistake about this, I had the other assay work replicated by a different firm. And they agreed. So we know the material is in the sea salt, because I made this from a spot of dead sea salt. We know it is warm. It's invisible to mass spec and falls to metal when you force it to do so. What we don't know, what transitions these elements are going through on their way to whatever they're going to end up staying, being. Are they changing into silver first and then moving to gold? Are they changing into copper and then silver? Maybe then to rhodium? What are they doing? Much, much more research needs to be done to understand what these elements are doing. That's why I brought up what I was saying before. You know, this might be undifferentiated matter. It may actually be able to become aluminum. It may actually be able to become zinc. There are so many things that science doesn't know about nature that is incredible because they can't see these elements. A lot of the things in nature, especially a lot of the medicines, they don't really know what is doing the curing. You may have something that's 90% warmth and not know it. Not have a clue.
So I have a question, Don.
Yes, they will see everything else. Yes. Go ahead.
Hello, Don. When you stored this, was it stored in the darkness or was it stored in sunlight or what was the environment of the storage for a year?
It was stored in a bucket with a lid on it, and it's a white plastic bucket. You can't see through it, and it was set under a bench.
Was it feeling light or dark?
I was exposed to it every day, all day. And within a few weeks of doing that work, I would literally hit the ground. I was back crawling again. My hair and my teeth started trying to fall out. I was sick. I couldn't eat. Couldn't keep anything down. I was seeing colors. I was tasting metal constantly in my mouth. So I think what happened was that we used sulfur to force the material back to a metallic form. When I was firing that sulfur, two things was happening. I was inhaling a lot of sulfur, gaseous sulfur compound, going directly into my body, and I was getting dosed with radiation, which could be beta, or could be gamma, or could be still feeling some of the effects of it. And, just now, in the past few months, started taking warmth again. So I wanted to wait until I chelated enough where I wasn't tasting metal constantly in my mouth before I started eating more warmth. Because it didn't want it to fall back to metal, which may or may not have been the right thing to do. But I didn't have any guidance there. I did what I thought was best, what I usually did. Cavalier or not.
And how are you recovering from that?
Story, Don. Listen, one of the things that we talked about was on our conversation, which I'd love you to touch, and that is the difference between the Atlantic and the Pacific Ocean. And then, one of the other things we talked about was the connection between the different Ormus elements and the musical scale. Two fascinating subjects. Would you speak to them?
Okay. Yeah, let's talk about C11 then. I've done considerable research myself. I've tested the waters on the French coast, the northern Spanish coast, the United States Atlantic seaboard from New York on down to Florida. I've also tested the Gulf of Mexico waters. I've tested the Pacific waters and the immediate Oahu area of Hawaii. And from reading what information Barry has published and what Arthur Ziegler has published and what Yassine told me, we definitely get much, much more precipitate from the Pacific Ocean than we do from all of those other sources. And the striking difference of that ocean is that it is surrounded by a volcanic ring of fire. Active volcanism encircles the entire ocean there. They literally call it the ring of fire. So it seems reasonable to me. I try to not overlook the obvious whenever possible. It seems reasonable to me that that volcanism is actually uploading warmth into the Pacific Ocean. From there, it's probably being distributed to the other seas in some form, some way. There again, with a complete avenue of research that could be opened up. In fact, you know, if we're going to find answers and make medicine, solve our problems, and quit raping and killing our planet, we need to start paying attention to these things. So I'll get off the soapbox now. We're talking about musical scale. I haven't done a lot of research in that area. I do know that everything in this universe is vibrating at some frequency or another. Well, the only thing stopping us from hearing the sound that that would be making would be the limitations of our hearing. So rightfully saying, when you're hearing music, you're hearing the pitch, the vibration of the string on the guitar or piano, violin, or the fluttering of sound waves from the wind instruments. And any movement in all of matter is going to have a sound or frequency associated with it. Some of the more interesting alchemical information that's been put out, Walter Russell published a periodic chart of the elements, which was based on a musical scale. I believe it went through four octaves with it. And there's some other information out. You might want to search the Divine Monochord. But I haven't done enough research on it to put all of it together. So rather than lead people astray by jumping to conclusions, I'll let you do your own research and see what you come up with. I had another question, too. we were talking a little bit about the showbread, that Egyptian elongated pyramidal shape that David Hudson talked about so much. I wonder if rather than the showbread being actually presented or administered in that shape, if that wasn't just a conical shape or a hieroglyph which distinguished it from the metal that it was made from. In other words, it would be a hieroglyph or a showbread or a manna, rather than being the physical form of what it looked like. It would be the metaphysical or elevated towards heaven form of gold. So imagine you were a scribe in an Egyptian temple. You needed to make a list. You want to present someone with 2 talents of gold and a pot of the manna. Well, how are you going to distinguish the writing the list of the 2 talents of gold metal? How are you going to distinguish the metal from the manna? You need to have a hieroglyph. Now that, to me, is what that elongated pyramidal shape represents, is the manna, rather than the actual physical form that the material has. All the research I've been able to do, all of the alchemical medicines were administered in their elixir form. That's what the Essene told me, and that's what all the research that I've done told me. And that's the story that I stick to. In fact, there were simple tests that you can perform yourself. Make some precipitate and dry it out. When you dry it out, see if it'll go away in stomach acid at pH 2. It won't. It's not a similar thing. But if you keep the same thing in the elixir and you never dry it out, it'll be dissolved totally back into solution long before you get down to pH 2. Your stomach is your pH. The pH of your stomach is down there. So that one simple, obvious little thing tells me that having it in the elixir form, it makes it far more assemblable than ever drying it out would be. But the only references I've ever seen to having the material dried out is when they wanted to perform a projection with it to try to transmute other elements into different metals. So that's Don's version of the story. I'm going to stick to that.
That's a great story, Don. Listen, we're getting a little bit of interference. You guys can probably all can hear that. Can you guys hear that? It's kind of buzzing sound.
Pardon?
Do see if it's coming from you. It's clear now. So whatever you're doing right now, it's nice and clear. Thanks, Don. Do go on.
I don't know. Nothing in here changed. You know, I don't know where the sound
came
from. I was hearing it too. Do you have another question?
Yeah, mate. Look. Let's open the floor for questions. I haven't done so far because you've been so bloody interesting, Don. And listen, I would like to extend the time of this call because look, we had a bit of trouble at the beginning getting on. And so listen, let's take some questions. Who's got some questions for Don of Florida, the alchemist of note?
I have a question.
Okay.
I did the wet method on a brand of salt called Sousa from the Pacific Ocean, and the amount of precipitate I got compared to the amount of precipitate using Celtic sea salt was about, I don't know, a fourth or a half, and I did it around the same time of week and used the same kind of water and did it the exact same way. I was wondering what you think about that as far as you saying that the volcanism makes the seawater on that part of the ocean have more ormus in it. And why do you think that was, that that's the amount of precipitate I got?
What were you comparing the amount of precipitate to?
Well, I did it first with D'Souza, and then the second, and well, the second, third, and fourth times I have been using Celtic since then. And since you mentioned the Pacific, I remembered that D'Souza is a Pacific sea salt, and was just curious as to why I got so much more. Is it just that it's stronger, and it, as far as the amount of precipitate, it doesn't matter. It's just, you know, the quality of it.
I think the D'Souza's salt is more highly refined than the Celtic sea salt. Notice that the D'Souza salt is almost pure white, whereas the Celtic salt is kind of a gray salt.
Okay.
And yeah, the more refined the salt, the more refined the salt is, the less warm it's likely to have. But the reason why I came up with a conclusion about the Pacific Ocean is because the quantities of precipitate that I was getting from all of the other sea samples, is, there was just no comparison. I was getting a tenth as much from the Atlantic Ocean water as they're pulling out of the Pacific.
And
so my question
is... This is Sig Virta, and I can validate what Don is saying there, because when I first started making precipitate, I was making it out of the South China Sea. And we're approximately 300 miles from Manila. And, of course, you know, they've always got a volcano or two going off down there in the Philippines. And so I'm almost certain that, you know, the precipitate that we get out of the water over here from the part of the Pacific, but it's the South China Sea, is probably much more rich. And that's been my experience as well.
I guess my question is, since I am on the Atlantic coast and cannot get any seawater from the Pacific side, and the only salt that I know of that is that you can get from the Pacific coast, do you know of any other salt that uses the Pacific water?
No, and as a matter of fact, I do not. And right now, I don't have any C11 myself. If someone asked me for C11, I would have to go and buy some Celtic sea salt and make it. Serious, I'm not kidding.
No, that's dumb.
I tell you, you know,
is that Aaron asking the question?
No, this is Corden, actually. I'm in North Carolina.
Okay, because let me put my mind to it. There are a lot of small companies out of many of these Asian countries like Malaysia and the Philippines that, you know, have local brands of this salt. And let me look around and I'll see what I can find.
Oh, that'd be great. I would love to because that makes a lot of sense. I would love to be able to get a hold of it.
A specific source.
I'd like to get to our next question, please.
I have a question concerning water and water sources. And this is Dick Buck, by the way. I have a source of water in Canada that displays some highly unusual properties, even in its raw form. And I was wondering if there's an easy way to test it. I've never actually made any ormus with it, and I haven't... done anything other than consume a lot of it, but it does have some interesting qualities. The source seems to have gold, metallic gold in it, because it's in the sand where it comes out of the ground, and you can see it quite sparkly, and it's also sort of a grayish clay mixed sand that comes out with where the water comes out. It's from a natural artesian well. The water is always extremely cold, even in the middle of a very hot summer. The temperature doesn't vary more than a degree or two from summer to winter. It's guaranteed to freeze your teeth if you drink it right out of the ground. And it seems to be reverting. Anybody who's ever drank it never got gray hair. And it grows things like crazy. It grows things to twice their usual size.
I want some.
I could probably ship some. I've been having some problems with shippers. UPS just takes my money and loses the shipment or breaks it or something like that. You never get anything back. and I'm trying to find a reasonable way to ship it, because I would like to send some, at least to Don or somebody in who's had some experience with it, to just see exactly what is in it, because I suspect it's rather rich in just enormous. I think it would probably precipitate out, and I'm planning on doing precipitation with that water. I was originally going to.
You didn't say which part of the world you're from.
This water comes from Vancouver Island, or from an island near Vancouver Island, and it's kind of. I've been drinking it now for a couple of years, and it seems to have some off the profound healing effects. And also, my dad, who's had a stroke, that's why I started feeding him this stuff. His hair's starting to turn black again.
I really want some.
Yeah.
Put a magnetic trap.
I haven't put a magnetic trap on it yet because the property that the water comes from does not belong to me. And I've been meaning to ask permission from the person who's a relative. And thanks to Tom from Cherokee, and I think it's just his thought that...
That's you, Tom?
That's me. I'm the one who suggested put it through the trap.
Okay, Tom. Good night, buddy. Your suggestion as to how to deal with a relative with bone cancer, I don't know at what level this worked on, but less than 24 hours after our email, I got an email from her, and she's still suffering from bone cancer and still going through all the stuff. And I've been one of the reasons that I'm jumping through all these hoops, probably the same as Don's reason. And I'm trying to help my dad and my cousin out. Anyway, she suddenly became from completely non-receptive to quite receptive, and I don't know why. It just coincided with our emails, because I've been working on it for over a year now.
It's all about intention. I keep saying that.
I think you're right, and thank you very much for the moral boost or whatever it was that took to push it over the edge, because I've been kind of walking on eggs about it. I'd hate to lose this source, because if the land ever gets developed, it'll be destroyed for sure.
Don?
Yeah.
Don?
If you wanted to extract it, the magnetic trap would be your number one choice. There are other ways.
But yeah, I'm planning on attacking it from several angles, and I'm going to put a trap up there just as soon as I can get another one built. I've got to go buy the material and put it together. High volume, so I'll probably have to make a big one, or maybe I'll build a series of traps and see what I can do with it. But
you could also take a gallon of it, of the water, just as it comes from the ground, and just filter it, and select some processed sea salt. You know, something that doesn't have much formus in it, but it will still have some magnesium. Dissolve the salt in there and let it sit overnight. Filter off anything that needs to be filtered out, and then precipitate it up to 10.7. The worm should go into the salt crystal and precipitate out with the salt. So you'll know which is there, because you'll have more precipitate than you normally get from that salt. Okay?
Gotcha. I'll do two, one without and one with.
And there's another thing you can do. Get some high-quality grapeseed oil and shake the oil up with the water. Do the infusion about 7 times, and the oil will extract the worms from the water into the oil. And you can use the oil topically or salad dressing, you know?
No kidding. That's what I use the salad dressing.
Yeah. So...
I've been using salad dressing. I've got about half and half oil and water, and a little bit of lemon and balsamic vinegar, and I shook that up, and it seemed to work quite fine for it.
Absolutely.
And I don't know, it doesn't taste all that much better, but everybody seems to just keep wanting to eat more of it. And I didn't know about that.
I want to take the next question, please.
I have a question for Don.
Next question,
yeah.
Please.
I have a question for Don.
Applications that we come up with where we're not involving cooking do on is killing it. Let's put the medicine back in our food. You know, we can have our eating back. There's nothing stopping it. We have the knowledge now. We'll be able to reinforce our soils. Do healthier, chemical-free, organic gardening with the worms in our soil, an excellent and extensive place to get worms is from the Pure Organic Minerals.
Hey, Don, I forgot to ask you to address the subject of salt as a protectant. So notice, I was curious, you are the only one who sent me an almost product that's salty. And I went, what's with the salty? You know, I mean, I can make almost like this. And then I went, well, he's obviously got a good reason for sending it out salty. So remember when I asked you, what you said was it acts as a protectant. Would you tell this group about salt as a protectant?
Sure.
Against irradiation and gamma rays, X-rays, etc.?
That's a good question. Essentially, the ormus like to be in tight places. It likes to hide out in the crystalline structure of salt. You'll find it in the crystalline structure or energetic lattice of salt and sugar. Okay, that's why you'll find it in grapes. You'll find it in the seeds of plants, back into the tight places again. It likes to congregate there. And when it's in salt, it's perfectly happy to stay there. You can ship it across the ley lines of the earth, and they can get hit several times with airport scanners and things of that nature. And it's happy enough and stable enough in the salt where it doesn't really get zapped. And I found that for additional shielding, if I just simply use cardboard and aluminum, anything that's non-conductive doesn't conduct magnetism or magnetic lines of force. A steel can seems to be the worst thing in the world to ship the material on, because it conducts the lines of force right through the material. But if you're shipping ormus in something that's non-magnetic, aluminum foil and a cardboard box, whatever packing material you want to use, if the ormus is salty, it'll get there intact. I think Barry was telling me that he had shipped some rather potent ormus in a steel can inside of another steel can. And when it arrived there, the internal steel can was wet.
Yeah, I had it wrapped in steel and aluminum and plastic and layers of everything. I have a question for you, Don. Do you still sell M3?
Yeah.
Is that what you took to get over cancer?
Pardon?
Is that what you took when you got over cancer?
I recommend that more than anything else. I don't make any medical claims. I live in America.
Of course, I know. I'm just saying, were you taking M3 when you got over cancer?
Yes.
Yes, good. Well,
with M3 and all these amethysts made from the Essenes black sand.
Mm-hmm.
What is M3, please?
It's sodium burned black sand, then it's precipitated, and it's 70% rhodium, 15% iridium, and 15% gold, all in the high spin state. And it works, believe me.
Now, Don, I don't want you to make any medical claims, but are you still have some of the black sand that you're using to make that?
Yes, I do.
I think I can get you more, so I'm going to be working on that.
That would be outstanding, because what I've been doing is every time I do a burn, in fact, you know, right before you came to Naples, I did, I picked a nice dry day and did four burns. I did two M3 burns, one M1 gold burn, and one copper burn. And here in Florida, you really have to pick your weather, because, you know, you get humidity that's 70 or 80% with thunderstorms every day.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have to pick your times to when I get a dry day, I go for it. I fire up every crucible I get my hands on.
Would you give us a Reader's Digest version of what a burn is, John?
In just a moment, yes.
Okay.
Every time I do a burn, I save the dregs in the pot. Okay, so if I had to, I could regrind the sand and burn it again and convert more of it. But the yield is nowhere near as high as doing the burn on the fresh virgin sand. So when I can get black sand, yes, please send more. It's in short supply. I have enough for a while. And the sodium burn process. I'll tell you about the gold. Take gold metal and either roll it out or hammer it out into thin strips. And you take pure sodium metal, which is not under oil. It's slightly oxidized. It comes in a steel can. It looks like a canned ham. When you open it up, it looks just like a pound of butter, just exactly like a rectangular pound of butter. And you cut that with a meat cleaver that you lightly oil with olive oil to help it slide through the sodium, because it is metal. You slice and dice your metal up and line the bottom of the crucible. I use 1810 Paul Revere stainless steel, best I can find. I line the steel with the sodium, dry the sand out before I ever cut the sodium. The sodium metal is rather dangerous stuff to work with. You have to be careful and you have to work quickly. You put the sand on top of the sodium, cover the crucible, and put a weight on the lid to hold it down. And I use I set it on top of a gas burner, propane, of about 170,000 BTU. And I let it cook for about 20 minutes. It gets red hot immediately. After a few minutes, you see a reaction where the lid with the weight on it actually lifts up and fire and light shoots out of it. And then it settles back down again. And I let it burn for about 10 to 15 minutes after that to make sure that I react as much of the sodium as possible. If you see any smoke after that initial flare-off, you're burning off warmth, and you shut the burner down then. After that, you do the dry method on it. You carefully react any sodium that's left, and you chisel out the material from the crucible, and you boil it in a lye solution for 4 to 6 hours. And then you'd filter it. I use vacuum filtering equipment with a button or funnel. Filter it to 1 micron or less. And you precipitate it with a hydrochloric acid solution down to a pH of 8.5. And it snows. As material cools down from the precipitation, it precipitates and settles. From there on, you wash the excess salt out of it, and you're ready to go. Sodium burn, after you've done it a few times, is really simple. It's extremely simple, straightforward process. It's the most effective way I know to take pure gold metal through the white powder form.
But here's another thing that you'll want to remember, Don, and I want to emphasize this. It's very, very dangerous. People have been seriously hurt doing it. And don't try it at home unless you have some instruction.
Yes, an alchemical thing that goes around is that the alchemists say that anyone can boil water with fire, but an alchemist can boil fire with water. And that's what happens. You take the tiniest little sliver of sodium metal and put a drop of water on it. Starts getting hot, evolving hydrogen gas, bursts into flames, and the hydrogen flows. And if you can imagine a pound of this going off, you would likely lose your house. I mean, this isn't anything to play with. But once you've done it a few times, it's really not difficult. But you have to be careful handling the material. Having some experience is...
just the first few times, right?
I tell you what, I know of a way to make outstanding wellness. It doesn't involve any heat whatsoever, because you're making use of the alchemist's secret fire. It's an offshoot of the dry method that Barry has posted on his website, and I believe it's probably on the CD too. You make up a lime instrument. We add 125 grams of lye to pure water, 125 grams per liter. So if you're making up a gallon, you use four doses of that. And put it over top of an edible mineral source. Cover it, put it into a container that you either shake up or stir. Shake it up or stir it every day. Leave it sitting in the dark in a cool, dry place, and stir it or shake it every day. Do that for 3 weeks. After that, you filter the water off of the minerals and precipitate it with a 20% hydrochloric acid solution. And the same thing happens. You get down to about pH 8.5, you stop, and it's snowing warmth. It's much less dangerous than boiling lye, because you're not working with any heat. You're not blowing off any warmth because of the heat. The warmth will go off with the steam as a gas. Warmth will go into a gas phase really quickly. But it's a good, simple, effective way, and I can prove that you get orms from it.
Don't use glass. Do not use metal. Use high-density polyethylene or something like that.
Yeah, and it's just, you're better off not to use glass, because lye will etch glass. Use HDPE, which is the best thing I can think of to do for this process. I use one of those white buckets that I told you about that I had to go with. And basically, it does the extraction. The alchemist talked of a secret fire. Well, there were two secret fires. One was KOH, which is potassium hydroxide, and the other was NaOH, which is sodium hydroxide. When you have this material over something that's not metal, in other words, like an edible ancient seabed mineral source.
Like the Purganic.
Right. Purganic is an excellent choice. It'll actually, the fire of the secret fire will actually extract the worms into the live solution. You just have to shake it up or stir it up once a day. After about 3 weeks, you'll have your worms all in there. And do a gallon of this with like a half a cup of that pure organic mineral, you'll have your worms right there, enough to last you for months with very little danger. You just have to be certain when you're mixing your lye up to be safe. You always put the lye into the water. The lye crystals go into the water, and it involves heat, so you want to do it outside where fumes that are involved and the heat that are involved won't be a nuisance to you. But that's really the only dangerous part of the process. Mixing up your lye and mixing up your hydrochloric acid solution. Other than Home Improvement, the store actually sells food-grade hydrochloric acid. At least the ones down here do. It's Smart Brand, and it says right on the label, meets the chemical codex requirements. Inexpensive. You can take that muriatic acid at its label and mix it half and half with water. Use that as your acid mixture. Again, you add the acid to the water. Never ever add water to acid or lye. So mix them up right way. You have your measurements. You can do this yourself. In fact, I thoroughly believe that the best matter is the matter you make for yourself. What I actually do, I teach people to do this, and they scratch their head. You know, it's like, well, why are you doing this? You're trying to put yourself out of business. Well, a couple of things here I want to make clear. I don't look at this as a business. I'm not a businessman. I don't try to sell stuff. All right? I want to make sure this knowledge does not get lost again. I want to make it as public as I think I can get away with, short of going on national TV. And another thing, people can't do this. They live in apartments. They don't have any place where they can do these processes. They don't have the ability. They don't have access to this, that, or the other thing. So when I sell this, I'm charging them for the service, for doing it. I'm not charging for the mana. I'm charging for the materials, time, and equipment. And I've said this 1,000 times, and I'll keep saying it. Barry and the Essene and Avi all gave me the M3, saved my sorry butt, and didn't charge me a nickel. Anyone that is sick that asks me for the mana is going to get it, even if I have to borrow money to ship it to them. And that's my attitude and opinion on the whole thing. To me, this is not a business. The mana should be for everyone, whether you can afford to buy it or not. If I could afford to give it away, that's exactly what I would be doing. I wouldn't charge a penny for it, or for making it, or anything else.
Well, what I would like to recommend to people is that when you purchase Ormus from Don, that you also send an additional donation, because he will use that donation, in addition to living on it, he will use that donation for doing some of his science research work. Right now, if he had a little bit of extra funding, he could do more assays on more of these materials. And he's the only person out there that's systematically doing this and tracking it. So we really, really, really value what Don is doing in terms of scientifically evaluating Ormus and how it works in terms of the metal.
And that was Barry Carter speaking, Guy.
Something has got to be done.
So do we have...
Material. And actually, that is so that I can afford to give them three away. So I can afford to give the copper away to fight it. So I can afford to give the white dog away to people who are sick. Okay? So when someone buys an overpriced bottle of Dead Sea Gold from me, guess what that money is going for? Okay? Again, they're not paying me for mana. They're paying me to help supplement humanity. Okay? For me, this is all about giving back. We need to do that. We need to be here for each other. Because I tell you, you know, the shape that the world is in right now is because there's been too much of what's in it for me. And not enough of paying it forward, and not enough of what can we do for you? What can we do to heal the earth? And there I am back on that soapbox again, preaching
yes,
to the choir.
Yes, listen.
Okay.
Let's have a couple of questions.
Don, thank you very much. I appreciate what you're doing. I want to make that clear. I really appreciate it.
Well, I get passionate about it.
You got my order coming tonight, Don. This is Dick up in Canada. I'm going to order some from you just on general principles. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Hopefully, one day all of humanity can be singing. Well,
so you're still a musician, huh?
What do we have for questions?
I have one. No.
Come on.
Go ahead, Kate.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Erin. I know in the group the subject of dew and the real manna, well, I want to say real manna, the original manna mentioned in the Bible. I know that, I think Dennis had advised me to ask you about your opinions about dew, morning dew, you know.
Actually, I'm quite convinced that there are worms in dew. I've done quite a bit of experimentation. I've played around with the Mutus lever several different years. And during the collection of the dew and distillation of it, I get a grease left behind that has a lot of worms in it. Unfortunately, I think that I'm actually blowing off more than I'm getting across because these alkalizers at such a low temperature. And, you know, the temperature of the flame, you can't use electricity with any of this work. So probably the best way, if you want to try to concentrate it, full moon dew is probably going to have the best because you have the action of the enhanced gravitational pull, and that's going to help levitate lighter elements like the iridium. And when you collect your dew, probably the best thing to do would be to drink it like it is, or evaporate it down under extremely low heat conditions so that you can get the it'll be left behind as like a clear grease. And it's sweet to taste. Unfortunately, I've moved around so much I haven't been able to pursue perfecting that process. But pretty much the Mutus Lieber, from what I can tell, is actually an accurate pictorial description of what to do, a process they use with dew and rainwater, and it involves distillation and sublimation. But now, you know, I haven't ever finished doing that. But to answer your question, yes, it's in the dew. I'm certain of that.
Thank you, Erin. Next question.
I have a question to follow up on what you said about your salt matrix. I believe you mentioned something about sugar. Would it be possible to pour off the salty part of the product and replace it with sugar?
I've never tried that.
To make it more palatable.
What,
just for taste, I mean.
Actually, you might be able to precipitate it directly into sugar. But two things. David Husson and the Yassine both says that the sugar competes with your body in the assimilation process. So I actually think that the salt is the preferred way. And Yassine said that sodium chloride was preferred over the potassium, and that using the salt was bio-friendly to begin with. Like all of your skin compounds are chlorides and such. But I haven't read those notes in several years now. I don't have them in front of me. So I'm kind of drawing from long ago memories from a different mountaintop.
I remember the same thing.
Sodium is what's necessary to open your cell matrix to allow things into the cell.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't too long ago that American dietitians were preaching no salt, no salt, no salt. And that's a lot of ballyhoo, unless you're eating mostly overly processed foods, which are loaded with salt from their factories. But eating natural forms of salt is essential to health. Absolutely essential.
Thanks for that.
And I'm running out of steam. Who's next?
I have a question. My name's Dr. Jen.
Hello.
Hi. My question is back onto the web method, and so I noticed that with your product from the sea salt, that you leave the product, the liquid, salty. But often people with the wet method will wash the precipitate enough times so that it's not salty. Do you think we're better off leaving it salty?
I tell you, I leave it decidedly salty. And there are several reasons for it. Once you've worked with us, you start recognizing that there's an oil associated with the material. If you do the process on some sea salt, you can actually see oil floating on top of the solution that your precipitate settles. Every time you wash your precipitate, you're washing this oil out, so you're losing some potency there. And the pH of your distilled water is probably around 7-ish, 7 to 8, most commercial distilled water is. So you're hydrating some of the worms every time that lower pH hits it. So you're washing the worms out along with your salt. So the more you wash it, basically the more strength and more potency you're washing out of it. A good rule of thumb is to watch how much you're washing it. To say you're measuring your precipitate that's settled in the bottom of your container by volume, say it looks like there's 3 ounces of precipitate there. Take the top water off of it and wash it one time using the same amount of water as you have precipitate. So if you had 3 ounces of precipitate, you put 3 ounces of water in there for a total of 6 ounces. Let that settle and pour it off and repeat it 2 more times. To get some experience, what I was doing after the first wash, I would start to taste the settled top water to see how salty it was. Precipitate is always saltier than the top water. And if you're overwashing the manna, you really are washing potency out of it, and you're washing some stability out of it.
The giant walnuts on my webpage were grown mostly with the third or fourth wash water that the Essene would throw away out on that tree.
He told me to wash it 3 times and not to overdo it. All right. And we discussed why. And pretty much is what I just told you. And if you're going to do something like you want to dry it out and dry the worms out and try to make a superconductive wire with it or something, then you'll wash it profusely to try to get all of the salt out of it. If you're not going to ingest it as the manna, then sure, you'll find out if you ever do any assays that you have a hard time getting all the salt out of it. Even I wash it until there's no taste of salt in any of it, and wash it again and send it off for assay, and it's still showing me sodium. So the sodium is making some kind of a home or a tie, most likely just a cubicle, a little house, a little crystalline house, enormous as it is. So from what I can tell, it's electrically inert, so it shouldn't be tying up with anything. It's interesting. From the pure organic minerals, I've made a red precipitate that actually glows in the dark.
Really?
I did that for 3 nights before it finally went out. If you walk, have it sitting in its flask settling out, walk in to the room, total darkness. You can see it glowing.
It doesn't make you want to drink it.
Where is the light getting in? Okay. I've made the sodium burned gold. it precipitates the gold out, and it's falling out of solution. So in the entire water column, you have this white precipitate that's popping out of into existence like popcorn, falling slowly to the bottom of the flask. Well, I shined a light into it, and it stopped falling. It would float. The white precipitate would pile up on top of the light beam and stay there. And what was below it fell. You remove the light, and the white precipitate would just stay there for, I don't know, days. So if the light was charging the Meissner or whatever the accepted paradigm these days for that is, and the material wouldn't settle until you actually put a stirring rod in there and stirred it all up, distribute that charge evenly in the material, then it would want to settle again. We put pictures on the internet a couple of times. I've got two or three pictures here on my machine where the new material has actually made a division there, just sitting right up above itself.
So we're running out of time
thing.
Here. Any last questions?
Pardon?
Any more questions, please?
Yeah, it looks like we're running out of time. 10:30.
Hey, this is Alan from Scotland. I just got a small thing to tell Don before we go. And this is in connection with shipping Ormus and whether anything happens to it. Don, as you know, I was taking your white dove from January of this year. But when we met in Naples last week, you gave me a fresh supply. I don't know whether you remember, on the Sunday afternoon, I was so blown on my ass with it that I had to go and lie down in your apartment. I can tell you I've brought it back in the plane in my suitcase, and it's still doing that to me. I don't know if you made it any stronger, but I'm definitely getting a bigger effect from it now. Thanks very much.
You're absolutely welcome, my friend. When are you coming over again?
Well, quite soon, I guess. It was a good experience, and I'm looking forward to learning some more, that's for sure.
Well, we're talking about having another get-together on the 16th and 17th of September. I think it's a little soon myself, but that one doctor, she was only going to be available that weekend for the next several months, and I wanted to accommodate her. And so I want to put the word out that there's going to be another workshop in Naples on the 16th and 17th of September. And it's free for all. Anyone that wants to come by, we'll have a high old time. The energy down there is amazing. And Barry, they're definitely going to bring you back down. And what we might need to do is get together on a possible tour. Maybe you could do Naples. Maybe we could set something up in Tampa. And then I know there's been talk of doing some work near Atlanta.
Yep.
So it would be good to get this scheduled.
That'd be great.
So we'll put the buzz in people's ear, let them start thinking about it and intending these things to be so.
Okay. Hey, that's worth at least a couple of $100 donation to have you two for two bloody days. That would have to be worth $200.
Like
even if you guys
Don
decide to do a donation.
I'd like to invite Don to Atlanta.
Don to Atlanta?
Yeah, Don, you're invited to Atlanta. Barry's coming
in
two weekends in November.
It would be my pleasure.
It would be my pleasure. I'll email you about it.
Okay.
I'd like to open that invitation for everyone to come to Atlanta. First two weekends.
Okay, I just got notice that my calling card has expired, so I'm going to have to bid you adieu. And I love you.
And Ormus do. Okay, bye, Don.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a minute.
Hey, Thomas?
Yes, sir.
Thomas of Cherokee Gold?
That's me.
I've been trying to get hold of you to have a conversation with you about being our next guest. This is your moment to say yes or no.
Sure, yes.
Great. This is an official announcement. Thomas is our next live alchemy guest. This time next month. The first weekend next month. Yeah?
Fine.
And I also want to announce that Siddhartha is doing a mid-month call. We're going to start a couple of mid-month calls with a couple of Ormus-related subjects. Some fascinating Ormus-related subjects. Our first guest is going to be Siddhartha talking on more the spirit aspects, more the metaphysical aspects, rather than the alchemical aspects of Ormus and also his spiritual background and his practice, because in my understanding, in my observation, a person can't call himself spiritual unless they have some kind of grounding, some kind of something they actually do, something actually practice to ground those understandings. So Siddhartha's going to be talking about that in 2 weekends' time. That's the 16th, on US time, and the 17th in Asia, our Sunday morning. So, what else? So we're going to be having mid-month calls.
Well, what about the next raffle?
Good point. I haven't got the next raffle organized yet, and Thomas.
Yes.
You want to donate to the next raffle?
Sure, I'll donate 2 gallons of water. How's that?
2 gallons?
2 gallons.
Holy smoke! Is that in two prizes, like 2 1-gallon prizes?
That's correct.
Great! Fabulous! Wonderful! That's fabulous! So listen, let's call it a day. Oh yeah, it's a day! On this call?
I have a question for Barry. I've been searching the Subtle Energies website, and I was looking for the list of various assays that people have submitted. Where exactly is that located, Barry?
It's in the TW subfolder.
TW, okay.
And I believe it's assays.htm.
Okay.
Dennis, before you go, this is Alan here.
Yeah,
how about
I thought it was Alan there.
Dennis, can you hear me?
I can hear you well, thank you, mate.
How about, since Thomas is on next time, how about carry Thomas's donation forward to next time? How about, since Don's been on today, how about $100 worth of Don's product, and I'll sponsor it? Don's a bit like Barry. He needs a bit of help here and there. He's maybe not in a position to donate it himself. But I'll sponsor that if you want to put that into the raffle for this time.
So you proposing to have a raffle for the 16th?
Siegfried here. I have 2 copies of the China study, 2 brand-new hardback copies of the book that I ordered for myself. I've got 3. I just need 1, so I'm willing to donate 2 copies of the China study, which is a very extensive study of diet concerning herbs and various teas and things, and how the Western or American type diet varies from the Eastern diet. And there's a lot of good information, good pointers in there. These are about $20 a copy, I think. So I've got $40 worth of the book that I'm willing to donate at some time. If you want that to be the raffle when I speak next on the 17th, 16th and 17th, then that can be the prize for that.
That's incredible. Look, I tell you what, why don't we... make that the prize for your talk, Siddhartha, and then the next...
Okay.
And then the next talk will be Thomas, and he'll have his 2x1 gallons. Can we make Don's prize the prize for the midweek call after that? by the way, which I announced on email, which will be the combination of Deb from Maine, who's the extraordinary kinesiologist and diviner. That's the right word. She uses kinesiology as a divining tool, and she has discovered all manner of extraordinary stuff about the properties and the consciousness properties of Ormus, and Jesse, who tends to get the questions in exactly the right format that Deb can successfully test on. They'll be both our guests in the midweek call in about 6 weeks. So we can make the prize of Don's product then. You okay with that, Alan?
I don't mind what way you want to do it. I just thought we could do that today, and Thomas could do his water when he was doing one in a month's time. It doesn't matter, Dennis. Let's sort out the list later.
Yeah. So we'll organize it, and we'll let you guys know. Is there anything anyone wants to say before we go?
Good Dick Fox here. Good to talk to all you guys. It's been something that I've been looking forward to for quite some time, and I never made the first couple. And thanks for the raffle prize, Secreta. I will be using that.
Very good.
For my dad, and I'll be definitely putting it to good use.
This is
really appreciate
right.
that.
This is Barry. I want to thank everybody for all of the donations that have been made for me, because for the first time, just from donations, I have enough to live on.
Good to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, very far out. And I also want to congratulate those of you in Europe who are listening to this call, because it's like 4:30 in the morning at the moment, and I congratulate you for your just extraordinary willingness just to go beyond the ordinary and have a listen to this. So with that, I think we're done.